This is Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell, awakening the world to the power of God's Word. And now here is your host, Dr. William Campbell.
Welcome to Beyond Words Radio, where it's our ambition to move beyond simply talking about Christianity to walking more like Christ. And there is a verse in Micah that calls us to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. Micah 6:8. It's a powerful verse. And there's someone who has done a lot of thinking about this. And so we've titled our program after this author's book titled Slow Kingdom Coming. And the author's name is Kent Annan. And he has been doing a lot around this verse. I would think it's his life message. I think we all tend to have life messages. Kent, would you say this is yours?
Yes. Hi, Bill. Yes, I think definitely this verse in Micah has been, I mean, it always was meaningful, but then these past 4 or 5 years, it really has been the guiding verse for me.
Well, tell us how you got into not just writing the book, but into seeking to live out this verse. Give us a little bit of your story to get started here.
Yes, yeah, so I grew up in Florida, just down a little south from where you are, and when I was finishing college, I thought I was going to go into business, and a family friend recruited me and said, hey, come do missions work for 2 years first. And I was reluctant, but then thought, oh, that would be interesting to do, and then I'll get back on the track I thought I was on. And so I moved to Europe, and I worked with a refugee ministry in Europe for 2 years, and it changed my life to see people who had left everything behind, whether it was in the former Yugoslavia or in Sierra Leone, where people were coming from at that point, and to become friends with them and to see the needs and be able to help out was a really profound experience for me. So it set the trajectory of the last 23 years of my life, having that experience. And so I've continued to, I did that for a few years, came back to study in seminary to prepare for this kind of work. Another short work with refugees in Albania and Kosovo, but then for the last 13 years, my focus has really been on working with people in Haiti.
Did your work in Haiti start pretty much with the horrific earthquake down there?
It was actually before that. It was about 13 years ago. So it would have been 5 or so years before the earthquake, and my wife and I were seeking for how we were going to serve next and weren't sure if it was going to be here in the U.S. or somewhere else, and we felt like God opened the doors to move to Haiti, so we went to visit my parents who lived up north in Toronto at the time. It was January. It was cold. We took our winter jackets off in the car and went into the airport, and within 24 hours, we were living out in the countryside in Haiti with no running water, no electricity, a tin roof over our heads, and we shared one little room in this home with a farming family there, and we lived with them for 7 months, and then we moved in closer to Port-au-Prince and lived there for another 2 years, and it was a life-changing experience to get involved with Haiti in that way.
That was like a second home to you, and then this earthquake occurs, and you find yourself in the middle of a great humanitarian crisis. What an experience it must have been.
Yeah, it was, and by that point, by the time the earthquakes, we lived there for 2.5 years, and we came back and had set up an office here in Florida and was traveling back and forth to Haiti, and I'd been down, so at that point, been involved in Haiti for about 5 years, and I'd been down to Haiti a couple weeks before, had some Haitian colleagues up kind of over the holidays, and they went back home, and then to get that call in early January, just a brief call from a friend down there, something big has happened, and I was like, I guess there were just about a minute or two before the phones cut out, and then just so I was up in Florida and watched this news keep coming in and coming in. It was just horrific to see the disaster. And I was able to get down on a humanitarian flight 6 days afterwards and spent a lot of time over the next 6 months down there.
And you talk about being in Europe and Middle East, helping with refugees. It sounds like, again, before the big crisis, which became the biggest migration of refugees since World War II here in our day, it sounds like you were already involved with refugees before all this mess up happened with ISIS, is that right?
Yes, so I've worked in the primary place people were coming when I was, this has been just over 20 years ago, so I was working with people, I think I'd mentioned like Sierra Leone, and there was a war in the former Yugoslavia and people coming out from Sarajevo, so I'd done that, and then came back to study in seminary, but then there was a crisis, which, you know, not at the scale of this, but similar in that it was just this heartbreaking images and news of when there was a war in Kosovo. I guess it was 15 years ago or so. So I had an opportunity then to work with the same group. So I went over and lived in Albania and in Kosovo for 6 months during the kind of crisis where a lot of Kosovars were having to flee the war and go into northern Albania and other places. So, yes, I definitely have been following with sadness what's been happening in Syria. Hmm. Grateful for the people who are in the midst of that, opening up their homes or through their church, able to sponsor somebody to come and see that it's too much suffering, and then also see the generosity that can emerge in moments of crisis like that.
What I'd like to do, Kent, is I noticed not only just skimming your book, but on the website, I found you give 7 practices for following through in this Micah 6:8, this incredible verse about, again, doing justice, loving mercy, and walking humbly with our God in the world. Let's go through these 7 practices. You might interface them, mix them in, intertwine them with personal stories, because that's engaging for all of us. But we want to know, when we think about refugees over there, or the ones we don't know here, wherever here is for some of you listeners, but for me, it's here in America, or when it comes to a crisis like Haiti, if I haven't been involved there, it seems so distant, to me. And yet,
right,
these are things, this Micah 6:8, this is for all of us. So let's go through the practices. First of all, participating in the coming kingdom. What's that about?
So participating in the kingdom is really saying, hey, 2,000 years ago, Jesus prayed, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And I think we're invited to participate in that kingdom coming on earth as it is in heaven, that Jesus was the one who was the inbreaking of this kingdom, and in his miracles and his way of life showed us the way of the kingdom. And I think we're invited into this kind of kingdom living. And so that leads us into this first practice of attention. Mm. And the practice of attention, to me, there's this French theologian who said, attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. Attention is the rarest and purest form of generosity. And I think that's great when we have so many things now competing for our attention, and you get on the internet and you can click on 50 things on one page and 50 things on the next page, and your phone starts buzzing with texts and all these things. I think this practice of intention for participating in God's kingdom coming is really important for a couple reasons. One is that we need to participate in God's kingdom coming. So where is God calling you to be involved in doing justice and loving mercy and walking humbly with God? Who are you called to help in your neighborhood? I think is important. And another part for me of the practice of attention that I found really helpful to think about is realizing and accepting I can't do everything. You know, so if we look at my Facebook feed, or if I look at the news from what's urgent this week to what's urgent next week, like there's so many things, and I think we can end up being paralyzed by having so many possibilities of how we could help that we don't end up helping anyone or helping at all. But I think what God calls us to is do what we're called to, not do everything, but to seriously do what we're called to. And to me, that's what this practice of attention is how are you awakened to justice, and then how can you focus that so you can serve well and really help other people?
Okay, so you personally had this sense, wow, God's kingdom is about more than my little world. There are people in need out there, and in my calling, as I started paying attention, was, give us a little personal story. How did God get your attention?
Yeah, so I think that one example would be in Haiti. So there are all kinds of needs, and there's good work to do here in the U.S., but as my wife and I looked at what we were going to do 13 years ago and thought, oh, Haiti is this place where there's significant need, and we found people doing work with a lot of integrity that we could partner with. And so it was challenging, you know, to go and live there and in a really simple way without running water, electricity, and all these things. But what is liberating is I think I found, well, I was where God called me to be, so there's nowhere I could have found more joy than in doing that. Now, there are different stages. So I have friends who work, you know, maybe in Florida in prison ministry, and I think that's great. You know, they found their calling, and it's hard work, but it's joyful work. Or there can be a mom who's just working like this season in their life, their attention is called to help out her children and focus on that, and maybe help out some other families who have their children are in difficult things. So for me, that call has been liberating to see. I don't have to do everything, but I do want to pay attention to how God wants me to help.
And so my prayer for myself, and maybe others can join me in this, Lord, help me to pay attention. What are you saying to me? What am I supposed to be doing to help advance your kingdom, to, Lord, to do justice, love mercy, and walk humbly with you? I'm paying attention, Lord, with your help. Now teach me. And so the next one is confession. Unpack that for us.
Yeah, so confession, I think, isn't usually talked about in these practices of doing justice, but for me, I've found confession has been really liberating in being able to serve better and serve for the long term. So I'll give you a couple of examples. I think I go into 7 or 8 confessions in the chapter that I think can be relevant to most anybody. One, for example, is I like to confess, and this isn't a sin, just confessing vulnerability. I like to confess that I get compassion fatigue.
Mm.
And so I help and I give, and there's another appeal letter that comes in my mail, and another neighbor needs something, and I found it really helpful to confess when I get compassion fatigue, because in that, then I can have my attention recalibrated, and I can often be renewed by God, or say, oh, I'm trying to do this on my own, and that it's trying to be my kingdom coming and not God's kingdom coming, which doesn't work well. And so confessing when I get compassion fatigue is important. I think I've found working in Haiti, confessing my privilege is really important. So when I have had the chance to learn to read and write and go to school and have opportunities in our country, when I'm in Haiti, it's important for me to understand the dynamic of serving other people. Say, oh, yeah, those are privileges. Or I have a passport that I can actually travel with. Confessing my privileges helps me understand the dynamic of helping other people, which is really important. I found it really helpful. And I think one last example is, again, not a sin, but sort of a vulnerability, is I find that when I confess that I like to feel good when I help others, that's a really helpful confession. It sounds a little funny to say it, but if I confess that I like to feel good when I help others, it can then free me up to say, okay, that's fine. I think God created us so that we feel good when we help other people and find joy in that. But when I'm really helping someone else, I don't want that to be the most important thing, how I feel. What I want the most important thing to be is how well it can actually help them, you know, not how good it can make me feel. So these are examples of some of these confessions that I've found in my own daily life and work in Haiti or working, you know, being part of a church, that these confessions can be freeing so that I can be renewed in my compassion, so that I can find the best ways to help, and so I can understand the dynamics of privilege, and all that helps me to grow in my love for God and grow in my love for my neighbor.
I'm going to share just a little story. Early on in my career, I did work in India and became hardened over time, as you said, compassion fatigue, seeing all the beggars in the street and Mother Teresa's work, but just so much overwhelming need. And one morning I was sick and getting on an overcrowded bus, I felt I was going to be throwing up, and someone saw I turned white. They gave me their seat. It was so packed, they were hanging out of the windows, and I sat down and opened my umbrella as a receptacle, and suddenly it occurred to me, I have had such a, I guess, a hardened heart when there's so many needs around me. I just said, Lord, if this is what it takes to get through to me, let me feel sick the rest of my days, but never take away what I just experienced in my repentance right now, your heart of compassion for the needs of the world. And immediately the sickness was lifted as soon as I said that prayer. But I'll never forget that, how he softened my heart. And we, any of us just watching the news, we get turned off. We begin to ignore the crisis of the refugee or the earthquake in Haiti or many other disasters, just the shooting, you know, down the street or in a school in another state. We harden ourselves, and we need to pray as you're teaching us here, Kent. Lord, show mercy. Help me to have your heart.
Yep.
The next one is respect. What is that all about?
Respect is a chapter that helps to take us a little bit deeper into the Jesus invitation to us to love our neighbor as ourselves. So I think, well, how do we love our neighbors as ourselves? I think that takes some work, not just of seeing someone say, oh, this is easy. I know exactly how they need to be helped. No, I think to love our neighbor as ourselves takes deeper listening. It takes awakening our imagination. It takes slowing down some so we can understand how to really respect and love our neighbor well. So I'll give you a quick example. In Haiti, I mentioned when we first moved there, and we didn't know any Creole, and the family we were living with didn't really know any English, and so we'd walk around and we'd go to different homes, and one of the things we quickly learned was you pause when you get to someone's yard to visit them. A lot of life happened outside in the yard, where cooking and washing clothes and pots would happen outside, because they just had these small tin-roofed houses where in the village where we lived. And so you'd pause at the threshold, kind of where you'd enter into the yard, and you'd stop there and say "honor," which means honor. And then you'd wait, and you wouldn't enter in until you heard them say back "respect," or respect. And I thought it was this really beautiful pause that all of us could do well in learning how to do justice and love mercy and walking humbly, is to see, well, where is that pause important in our lives? You know, is there a neighbor where if we paused more, pause to slow down to really listen and exchange honor and respect, oh, we'll see a little bit more how we could do justice in their lives? Or in our church, you know, is there a way that we can kind of build that pause in so that our ministries can be a little bit more effective in helping? So I think that pause of honor and respect can take us deeper into this work of doing justice and loving mercy and loving our neighbor as ourselves.
I remember as a kid, I used to bully a little guy named Billy. He had my name, you know, and one night I had a dream in which I was going to push Billy over a rail. And I realized I just pushed Jesus, and I woke up with a start. And he said, "As you've done at least to these, you've done it to me." And it taught me a little more respect. Would you say it's something like this? I sometimes find when I meet people in a street, I realize I can't change everyone's life, but I can love them. I think that's part of respect, to just say, these are fellow human beings. I could be in the same place, but Jesus cares for them. I should too. What I can do, I can love them with the love of God. Is that kind of getting it down to a practical level?
Exactly, getting down to a practical level and seeing that God's image, that everybody bears God's image. And I think it can get really practical as well. So like a lot of people do short-term missions, whether they go to help someone in the Appalachian Mountains or out in the countryside, or they travel to another country to do short-term missions. And in the book, I give these really practical ways that this respect can play out to really change the way that we do short-term missions by just asking ourselves three questions about respect that are challenging. They make it harder to go. I think they demand a little bit more of it. I call it a respect tax, but I think ultimately it takes us to a much deeper, more loving place.
So, for example, you're respecting their culture, their language, not trying to change those externals as you bring the eternal gospel of life to them. That's probably part of it, right?
Exactly that. And then also thinking, well, if somebody who doesn't have very much at all kind of offers us respect and honor by giving us generous hospitality, what are the implications when I go back home? Can I accept hospitality from someone who, you know, has almost nothing, and they give us a week or two of a life-changing experience for us? It seems to me pretty disrespectful if we then return home and it doesn't make any lasting difference in our lives. You know, if it's just a really meaningful experience we had. If it's only a meaningful experience we had, I wonder if that's not exploiting them instead of respecting them.
This area of respect is so critical, isn't it, for any area in which we seek to honor God, because every human being is made in the image of God. And so we should know God's looking over our shoulders saying, do you respect the way I respect? I gave my life for this person, for that one. And then it goes to partnering. Talk to us about partnering.
Yes, I think almost any work that we do for change, for justice, for mercy in your church, in your neighborhood, at your workplace, there's always partnering involved. So I thought it'd be important to slow down and think about partnering. How do we partner well? And I think often in the work of justice and helping other people, we think of partnering in the way of going to save somebody. So there's a kind of famous story of that's, I think, a preacher told originally of someone's walking down the beach, and there are all kinds of starfish washed up on the beach. And as they see all these, and there's thousands and thousands of them, and they see these starfish, and they're just kind of overwhelmed, so they don't do anything, but they keep walking and eventually come across someone who is standing there, and he's throwing starfish back into the water. And with there's so many that he's never going to get many back, enough back in before they dry out in the sun and die up there. on the beach. And so the man stops this guy who's throwing them back in and says, hey, well, why are you throwing these in? You're never going to save all these starfish. And the man says, no, I'm never going to save all of them, but I can save this one. And I think I think there are good parts to that story and also parts that are a little problematic when we think about partnering. One is, like, I've done that, and I think that chance to sometimes just focus in on one person and help them is really important in our lives, and to help somebody, that's good. But I think the problem with that story is the starfish is sort of a passive, sitting on the beach, unable to do anything and help itself. But I think the reality is most of the time when we're helping other people, that's not how lasting change happens, of kind of doing something for someone where they're passive and we throw them back in the water and save them. Instead, I think so often the work of justice involves partnering with other people and partnering with our communities, or you know, partnering with a family who's become homeless and they need to get out. We can't just save them and do something for them. There's an opportunity for partnering, and maybe there's job training, and is there a home that can be a transition home, and all these creative things take so much partnering that I think reflecting and thinking about the best ways that we can partner together can lead us into deeper, more lasting ways of working for God's kingdom.
Mm. You have the subtitle for that chapter, With, Not For. And one thing we like to say reaching out to people is to give them a hand up, not a hand out. I know we, in a former church, we partnered with people in the city, people who didn't have anywhere to go, and we tried to help them get jobs and such. And we learned how hard that can be. It's very difficult sometimes when you pour into someone, you maybe get a job for them, get them started, and they just fail at it, and they're right back where they started again. What do you do, Kent, when you find you're trying to partner to be with them, not just for them, and they don't seem to change?
Yeah, I think that's even thinking about the partnering of what will this look like if one side or the other will fail, and you know, what's a failure and what's a success? And I think that slow work of respect, I think it's a slow work of knowing that for some people in different circumstances, it's not going to be an easy change. And so how do we give them the best opportunities? And I think part of this slow kingdom coming is going in kind of with eyes wide open and saying, okay, we have our best hopes, but they're people, and all of us are hurt people in some different ways and have our different weaknesses. So I think in those kind of things, the example you gave, which is a really good one, we just have to find ways to do our best and then to learn through it, I guess, to me, is part of it. And that goes into next practice as well, but sort of think, okay, if we fail, then let's not just blame anybody, but sort of, you know, what could we do better next time? What could they do better next time? And can it keep being this process by which we keep growing together and not seeing that it was a one shot where it's all over? Because we've got to be in this for the long haul, I think.
And to me, part of it goes back to what you were saying around respect. We've already won a victory if we love someone. I mean, that's what Christ called us to be, called us to do. He didn't change everybody around him. He transforms us from the inside out when we turn to him for help. But God is love. And there's such a victory there. Your life is a model to all of us listening, Kent. You're going out and showing the love of God to people, even when they don't respond in a way you hope for. So you touched on that fifth practice, truthing, hard thinking, and feet on the ground. Give us maybe a story around this and help us understand it a little bit better.
Yes, my first of this, truthing is actually a scientific, it's not a term that I made up, not a term that Stephen Colbert made up. It's a scientific term where geologists or others take a picture from up high, like from a satellite or a plane, but they don't think they know the whole truth until they then walk with that map or that image down on the ground. And they think that, like, the big picture is important, but so is feet on the ground. So an example that was really formative for me that happened, you know, soon after I moved to Europe, like I mentioned, worked with refugees 23 years ago, is I went to visit someone, a colleague who I was just getting to know, named Scott, in Athens, Greece. And he had this really vibrant ministry to a lot of refugees who were coming up from northern Africa. And there's something just kind of special about his and insight, as well as the, like you've mentioned, the love that was there, but then the really practical insights into doing good ministry. And so, you know, I kept on asking. I was early in my ministry and trying to learn. And so you know, I kept on asking and trying to learn, like, how do you do this? Like, how do you know to do that? How do you know to do this? And I found out that Scott, who had a young family, had three kids at home living in an apartment with his wife in Athens, and two different times early in his ministry to refugees in Athens, Scott had gone out for 1 week in a winter and 1 week in a summer and had actually lived with the refugees that he was serving. And so he went out in the winter, and he didn't take a winter jacket, and he slept on the subway grates with them, and he found out where they could get, you know, a hot meal with them, and he found out how hard it was to get, you know, good-fitting shoes, and how hard it was in the summer to get a shower, where, you know, some things were available, but showers weren't, so they built a bank of showers in their ministry. But there's something, to me, it was really profound, and it shaped how I've done my work for the last 23 years, I think, since knowing Scott. And I think two things happened in how Scott did that. One is he got more insights into practicalities of how he could help the people he was serving. But the second thing is I think his love for them entered a little deeper into the marrow of his bones. And so I think that's an example that's a little bit extreme, but I think it can be the kind of thing that all of us can apply in different ways. Like, say we're working at a soup kitchen in our church once a week where we serve people who are homeless, and instead of just you know, giving out the soup and the finishing in the soup in the kitchen and heading home, do we take the bowl of soup and go and sit down and talk with the people that we're serving and actually share the meal with them, you know, not just give them a meal? And I think there can be lots of different practical ways where this true thing can be part of how we want to keep growing in truth so that our love can make more of a difference in other people's lives.
Beautiful and very powerful. I confess, one time I tried to do that kind of thing. I got out in the cold of a winter night, and I was going to, you know, be out in the streets. And I turned back around and went to my warm bed. I gave up.
Yeah.
When I found there were no rescue missions open. I mean, everything worked against me. And I realized, I don't have a clue. I don't have a clue. But you know what? As you said, we can start somewhere. We can sense what others are experiencing. So, Lord, help us to take what you're bringing to us, Kent, and to practice it faithfully. And that's kind of how you close out your book. We have just a minute left. If you could give us a closing word of challenge and encouragement. I think we all need to be encouraged. We don't want to just feel guilty. We want to know God's grace and be motivated by love.
For sure. I think in this slow kingdom coming, thanks for the chance to talk with you and everybody who's listening. I think my word of encouragement would be, you know, this can sound challenging or intimidating, or like, oh, it's already life is hard just getting to work and your kids and, you know, whatever daily life is. But I think when we're invited into doing justice and loving mercy and walking humbly, as the prophet Micah said, we're really being invited into the good life. I really truly believe that we're being invited into a life that's full of joy and serving and meaning. And so in each, in our ways, wherever our attention is called, I just pray for the people who are listening that you'll find a way to get involved in doing justice and loving mercy. And it can be partly responding, of course, to needs out there, but I also hope that it's a response of joy and love, because when we participate in God's kingdom coming, we're participating in the very most important part of our lives.
Thank you, Kent. And to the listeners, again, the book is titled Slow Kingdom Coming. You can just Google that and pick it up. It's by InterVarsity Press, but I'm sure you can get this in numerous sites online. Kent, may God bless you as you continue to set a standard for all of us. You've been an encouragement to us.
Well, thanks. It's an honor to be with you.
This has been Beyond Words with Dr. William Campbell. And Beyond Words is a ministry of Scripture Awakening. Visit us on our website at scriptureawakening.com, where you can download free podcasts of all Beyond Words programs.